This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
The Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Centre presents Well, Well, Well on Joy, the show that's all about sex, health and well-being.
Joy, Joy, Joy. Hello and welcome everyone to Well, 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 brought to you live every Tuesday from midday. My name is Jessie and with me this week, my co-host is Jack.
Hi, Jess.
How are you doing, Jack?
Well, much better now. I needed grief counselling last week because I flew to Perth on the weekend and missed my flight.
Did you?
1 minute overdue.
Oh, no.
We won't name the airline, but I had to buy another ticket, which is, I know it's a first world problem, but I had to.
That's so frustrating.
Very frustrating.
I went to Strawberry Fields Festival on the weekend.
That's why we're all a bit tired.
Got back last night and I think I'm struggling with losing my voice, so I apologise if it's not coming across on radio very well, but I think we'll try our best, eh?
We shall.
So if people haven't tuned into Well, Well, Well before, what can they expect from us today?
Well, here at Well, 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 we talk about topics related to sex, health and well-being in our gender and sexually diverse community. There's been a lot of hype leading up to World AIDS Day next week, so a lot of different things are happening around the city, and we'll focus on some of that today. Who else have we got on the show, Jess, today?
Oh, right. So today we will be chatting with Autumn from Positive Women, who'll give us some insight into HIV from a female gendered lens. At VAC, a large proportion of our work goes into health initiatives targeting men who have sex with men, so it'd be good to get a different perspective.
Definitely.
Yeah, and we'll be exploring the differences in how women experience HIV in Australia. And following this, we'll have a short segment from Jeremy Wiggins to talk about the launch of an exciting new campaign called TouchBase, which is a national harm reduction website focusing on alcohol and other drugs for the GLBTI community. And so, Jack, of course, if we want our listener to join in the conversation, how can they do that with us?
Well, if you want to be part of our conversation, and we want you to be part of our show, you can call us at Joy, 1300-JOY-949, send us an email on air at joy.org.au, or send us an SMS, 0427-JOY-949. You can tweet us at WellWellWellJoy, and of course, you can like us via facebook.com/WellWellWellJoy.
That's right.
And the other thing to mention to everybody out there is that our shows, including this one and so many previous weeks, are all available to download on podcasts. So if you're already listening and want to hear our voices again or hear our guests again, you can go to go to joy.org.au and you can locate the show and any other show you want to listen to and call up the podcast.
That's right. So a big shout out to our podcaster, David, for the great work he does.
He does a great job. I think he makes us sound better than we really are.
Oh, really? Well, that's the whole idea, right? Oh, thank you very much, David.
Joy 94.9.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. You're with Jessie and Jack, and we have our guest here, Autumn Pierce from Positive Women. Hello to you, Autumn. How are you?
Hello, I'm well. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on the show with us. Could you start by please telling us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, sure. So I'm the Health Promotion Coordinator at Positive Women Victoria. And we're an organisation, a community organisation, that's fully funded to support women living with HIV in Victoria.
Okay, great. And what are the main aims of your organisation?
Well, we provide support and advocacy to women living with HIV. And more specifically, what that encompasses is a really fine-tuned, tailored approach to supporting the individual needs of each woman who walks through our doors.
And I know VAC, through our HIV Services Program, has had a long-standing partnership with Positive Women and Straight Arrows, but Positive Women particularly. And there's coming up, as part of World AIDS Day, is the Women's Day at the Positive Living Centre, which you may be part of.
That was last night.
Oh, last night, but you can talk to us about it.
Yesterday.
Well done, well done. I knew it was coming up.
Yeah, it was fantastic. It was a really great opportunity for numerous women to come together in a social setting.
Yeah.
And it was just so relaxed. You can really feel how, you know, the conversations never, hardly ever touch on HIV.
Yeah.
It's just an opportunity to speak freely about anything. You don't constantly have to worry about what might slip.
In a statistical snapshot, what kind of numbers are we looking at within Australia in regards to women living with HIV?
So around 10% of the estimated just over 27,000 people living with diagnosed HIV in Australia are women.
Hmm.
And in Victoria, more specifically, women make up just over 600 people of the total in Victoria.
600 is still quite a lot. And I said to you before and to the listeners that I was in Perth on the weekend, and for those listeners who aren't aware, HIV is now a heterosexual epidemic in Western Australia, so the dynamics has shifted dramatically.
I guess we forget that it is actually different from state to state, isn't it?
It is.
We kind of think that it's kind of similar across the states, but that's really not necessarily
not
the case.
Not at all.
And I think we also forget that on a global perspective,
that's right,
it does disproportionately affect women.
Absolutely.
Does it disproportionately affect women? I was aware that it was about 50-50.
51-49.
51-49. Fair enough.
And if you think globally, women are more of a disadvantage in regard to all sorts of things, employment, financial independence. So there's,
which we will get into very soon. So what major changes have there been for women living with HIV in comparison to the early days? And have you got any personal narratives that you might have heard or you'd like to share with us from just the work in this field?
So I think the major change would be around the area of health that we're now able to focus on.
Mm.
So in the 80s and 90s, the focus was on survival, whereas now we're able to focus on living well. And women specifically, what we see the focus being on is reproductive health, also relationship negotiation and disclosure to partners and to children.
Yeah.
So
you're saying it's gone from shift from survival to these things. Do you see that as a positive thing?
Yeah, definitely. But I think from an organizational point of view, it's important to remember that we have women who lived through the epidemic when they were in survival mode, and we have women who were diagnosed yesterday. So there's a lot of implications for support.
Yeah.
The woman who was diagnosed in 1989 is not necessarily going to require the same support or have the same needs as a woman that was diagnosed yesterday.
Yeah, so it does need to be very specific and tailored, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
And continue.
I was just going to add that I think as far as the immigration having increased over that time as well, what we see more now is visa considerations having to be made.
Mm. Right. Okay. So do you think that disparity between the groups, has that ever caused any issues in the work that you do between like survival and different focuses that women have?
I think issues for the organization or issues between these two groups?
Either one, really.
I wouldn't say issues. I would say it's just an important consideration to make. I think it's important to validate everyone's experiences. It's important to acknowledge these women who thought there was no hope and have really were part of the initial response. And they really are to thank for the fact that Australia, there's such a low prevalence within this country as a whole.
Yeah.
Mm. So, no, I don't think it's an issue. I think it adds to the response, but it is something that we have to be mindful of.
Great.
I think it's amazing now that we can have the conversation that women can have children. Positive women can give birth to children. They're on antiretrovirals and children are born negative.
Absolutely.
I remember when that was first floated, people were horrified by why would you want to have a child if you're HIV positive?
Mm.
And it just shows you how far we've come in the discussion, in the treatments, in the clinical world, that this is a reality, that children are born negative to positive women because of good medication, good adherence issues. It's a game changer again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. So the main mode of transmission amongst men who have sex with men would be through sexual contact. And there is actually a very small amount of transmissions that actually occur through intravenous drug use. And would you say that is the same amongst women in Australia?
Absolutely. So most women living with HIV have contracted the virus through heterosexual sex, whether that be here in Australia or overseas, most often in a high prevalence country. But very, very low proportion have reported intravenous drug use as the source of HIV.
Yeah, and I think that still can be a misconception amongst the community, isn't it? That a large proportion of transmissions occur through injecting drug use, which is completely not the case anymore.
No. It's been managed quite well. And I think, as I said before, women, all they've done mainly is to trust a partner.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I'm not, and you didn't say this on air, but most women do contract HIV from a long-term partner or a husband.
Yeah.
So not that if that's not the way they contracted it, it's any less.
But that is a large proportion.
Yes. But it's an issue for people to think about.
From a husband who is engaged in other sexual activity?
Mm-hmm. Most often, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Joy 94.9.
This is Well, and you're listening to Joy 94.9. We're joined again today by Autumn Pierce from Positive Women, just to continue our discussion on HIV from a woman's perspective. So earlier we were talking about, you know, different experience and transmission and all that kind of stuff, and how we're saying that women, a large proportion of the contractions come from their husbands or from heterosexual sex. So just continuing that conversation, how does the lived experience of women living with HIV differ to that of a gay, bisexual or trans man?
Yeah, it differs on several levels, and I think people often are unaware of this. So even from the start, biological susceptibility, women are more susceptible to HIV than men.
Yeah.
Modes of transmission, like we just discussed, geographical accessibility, socioeconomic status, testing patterns, service use.
Just to get back into that geographical accessibility, what do you mean by that?
Well, women living with HIV are more likely to live in regional and rural areas than men living with HIV.
Okay.
So which has implications for access to services, medication, healthcare. Yeah, so even the perceptions of risk, as Jack and I were discussing in the break, and attitudes towards treatment, all of these things differ between men and women.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to incorporate all of this into our response to the epidemic on a national level.
In what ways do you think it would differ in terms of, for example, testing patterns?
Well, there's no culture of testing among women. In the gay and MSM communities, you know, men
it's
are getting
common.
Tested. Yeah, men are encouraged to get tested every 3 months, every 6 months, whatever is recommended.
Yeah.
But just quickly, we had a stall at the Travel Expo in Melbourne earlier this year. And it was a preventative campaign. We were promoting safe sexual practices overseas, especially for women, as there's a rise of women going overseas and contracting HIV in high prevalence countries.
Mm.
Because we're lucky enough to live in a very low prevalence country that often you situational inhibition and you act a little bit differently. What stays in Bali, what happens in Bali stays in Bali, that kind of attitude.
Sure.
So I was speaking to women at this stall. And I was speaking to one in particular and going on about our message and talking about, you know, wherever she was going and the prevalence there and how she had to be careful and what was her safety plan. And then I asked her, you know, did you find this information useful? And she goes, oh, yes, it's useful. I'll definitely pass it on to my friends. But, I'm married.
Oh.
And it's like, well, actually...
Mm. Yes.
That, I don't want to say that means nothing. But
no.
That doesn't mean that you aren't at risk.
Yeah.
So these... You know, there's no perception of risk among women.
Mm. Would you say disclosure issues would be different for women? And have you got any anecdotal evidence that you could share with us in regards to women or a woman disclosing their status to either their families or children?
Yeah, I think that, you know, just the other day I was speaking to several women who, it's funny because you speak to them and they've very much come to terms with their diagnosis,
mm-hmm.
and they're very strong, empowered women, but they're kind of at a loss when it comes to disclosing to their children. You know, should I, shouldn't I, where should I do it, when should I do it, will they be angry if I wait too late, are they too young, will they be traumatized now? So it's definitely a tricky spot.
A huge balancing act.
Yeah.
Do you guys give any kind of, obviously each person's case is very unique, but do you ever give some kind of guidelines or advice as the Positive Women's from you guys, or is it just really you're
really
there to listen? And
yeah, exactly. I do know that our partner organization, Straight Arrows, has developed a resource around disclosure to children.
Okay.
That we would refer women to.
Okay.
But again, as you know, the point of a very targeted individual approach is about taking into consideration the unique situation of every woman.
Sure.
And trying to not necessarily offer advice, but to offer appropriate resources.
Yeah. Based and on if our listener wanted to access this resource, how do you think they would get that?
It is on our website, on the Positive Women website.
Okay.
We have a tab around disclosure or something similar.
Yeah.
And I do have a link to that resource on the site.
Great.
It'd be well worth it. Now, usually people still consider HIVs as a gay man's disease. And in Australia, generally, and in Victoria, it is predominantly a gay man's disease. But for the women who do have it, do you think they experience stigma or discrimination in on different ways and different levels?
I think, again, what we were speaking about previously, and I think this is something all people with HIV struggle with. People just assume there's deviance in your character. Mm. Oh, you're a junkie or a whore or, you know.
You got what you deserve sort of thing.
Yeah, like, well, you shouldn't have been doing that anyway. No wonder you should have known. But women, they experience these extra layers of discrimination.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
And one of those because of their childbearing capabilities. So now they're viewed as vectors of the disease. So, yeah, I do think they experience it differently.
Is there any difference in access to healthcare or medications, for example, for women?
Well, we touched on this briefly as far as geographical access.
Yeah.
So the same services and support are available to women, but living in regional and rural areas, there's special considerations to make. So not only are there issues around access, if you do choose to stay local to receive your care and medication, what you risk is knowing the pharmacist.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or, you know, there's issues around confidentiality.
Sure.
I know a lot of our clients at VAC who are in the regional areas, they would still choose to come to the city, come to Melbourne. These are predominantly men at the PLC.
Yeah.
To access doctors and medications and clinical services because of that very thing. Too many people know each other in small communities.
Yeah, we see women do, you know, 6-7 hour round trips every 3 months just to check in with their doctor and get their medications to avoid all of those issues in their small town.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a shame, isn't it? Mm. What about just in terms of subsidisation on the PBS? That's the same, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Because you can access it at your local pharmacy, but the same issues are there.
But it's definitely not, for example, rapid testing. I know they always target MSM.
That's
right.
There's
a lot of services that are for rapid testing for MSM. So maybe we need to start to change that culture a little bit. There's been a lot of talk about PrEP, pre-exposure prophylaxis, lately, and it's been a bit of a hot topic. So, which is, you know, for those of you listening, it is a tool for men who have sex with men to reduce HIV transmissions. Now, can women actually use PrEP as well?
Yeah, definitely. It's effective for women as well.
And is it often used for that purpose of when they want to engage just in casual or just sexual intercourse that they use it to prevent HIV?
No, with women, you'll see it used in a serodiscordant relationship when trying to conceive naturally. So we recognize PrEP as a useful tool in that context, but not as much as a preventative tool in a broader sense.
Okay, so would you say it's very, so it's not as useful as a preventative tool?
It's just not.
Not in the reproductive sense, but.
Right, I just know that you won't see the uptake among this demographic because, you know, you go to, again, going back to perceived risk, what doctor is going to actually recommend this for a woman who went out and had a crazy night?
Yeah.
It's not top of the list.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
At Joy 94.9, there are approximately 300 volunteers bringing you over 75 shows, 24 hours per day, 7 days a week. That's a lot of facts and figures to take in, but here's one more number for you to think about. 1-300-569-949. That's the number to call to talk to the Joy sales team about becoming a Joy sponsor. One phone call can get your business on air and online, reaching thousands of Joy listeners at a price you can afford. 1-300-JOY-949. That's 1-300-569-949.
This is Well, 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 and you're listening to Joy 94.9. So we are back with Autumn from Positive Women to finish off our conversation. So Autumn, what are some of the most pressing issues women face with regards to HIV?
Well, I think as a community, the lack of a testing culture is important to mention because oftentimes when we were talking about the differences and experiences between men and women, that with the testing culture that you find within the gay and MSM communities, men are getting tested frequently, whereas women often present to the doctor with an AIDS-defining illness. They wait until they get quite sick.
Yeah.
And that has a lot of implications for their long-term health.
Of course.
But on a broader level, women aren't recognized as a priority population on the national HIV strategy. And I think that's a very pressing issue. I think the resources that we have to rely on as well, the Kirby surveillance data and the Future study, that data isn't gender segregated. So it's not segregated. Mm-hmm. Well, the Kirby actually is. Okay, let me back up. So both of them are actually gender segregated, but only in certain areas. And we find that it's not always helpful. So a pressing issue would be to have this data that is already being collected, segregated by gender, and analyzed and available to the wider sector, so that the strategies that use these documents to inform the priority populations have the whole picture. And once we get women on the agenda, we can invest in more research in that area, which will in turn guide our efforts to support the unique needs of women living with HIV.
Especially when you consider the changing demographic in different states, as we said, WA, and increasingly Queensland as well. There's more women with HIV. It's a lot to do with the mining business, mining boom and stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a service. Women not being named as a priority population at a national level is a disservice at every level, at an individual level, community level, a state level, and again, as a national level.
Hmm. And is there any work being done to try and change that?
Yes.
I think it's in good hands with Autumn. That's a very emphatic yes.
We go on about this to anyone who will listen.
Good.
So. And we're happy to let the listeners know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. And if you're interested in learning more, we do have quite a bit of our advocacy work up on our website.
Great.
And anyone's welcome to pop into the office for a chat.
What is your website for those who may be listening?
So it's positivewomen.org.au.
Okay.
Perfect.
And what are the main things that need to be changed with regards to structural changes, and what would the first step be?
I think we have, as a women's organization, we have to recognize that, you know, we cannot address HIV in isolation. Yeah. We have to recognize that 1 in 3 Australian women experience physical violence. Mm. We have to look at that in Australia, women earn less than men for the same work.
Mm.
We have to look at, you know, women are more likely to be in unpaid or casual roles. So we have to look at some of those structural systemic issues as part of our response to HIV. So gender inequality being the most significant one, the most important one.
It's interesting when you say that, because it's not that many years ago that the laws were such that rape couldn't occur within marriage.
Yeah, exactly.
The laws may have changed. Mm. Attitudes don't necessarily change as quickly as the laws do. Mm. And a woman was regarded as a chattel within the marriage framework. So old habits die hard. So there may have been a reform, but you've got to reform people's minds and attitudes and values.
And Jesse, when you introduced me, you mentioned the gendered lens. And this is really our approach to everything. So we advocate for, we encourage policy makers to develop all policy through a gendered lens, to recognize women's engagement with a gendered social system. And the implications of such are reflected in these strategies and policies.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's vital.
Yeah, you can't really take a strategy that targeted towards MSM, or have come from the research of MSM, and just kind of apply that a blanket kind of.
Exactly. And that's not an appropriate response. You can't develop a campaign targeting men and then just add the word woman.
Just change the gender, yeah.
You know, cross out men, add the word woman, and then call it inclusive.
Yeah.
That's not how it works.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Now, World AIDS Day is coming up, December the 1st. I'm sure you'll be busy. What do Positive Women have planned for World AIDS Day?
Oh, heaps.
Good. Tell us about it.
So we're working as part of the big collaborative effort of several partner organizations to present lots of events across in the lead up to World AIDS Day and also events on the day. So.
And it started last night with the Women's Day at the PLC,
exactly.
And there's the Doherty Institute Forum and launch on December the 1st.
On the date, yeah.
Yep.
And there's the memorial service at the Positive Living Centre in the evening. And you're involved, everybody's involved with that.
Yeah, and I think that's something we want to stress, everyone. We're all involved in that.
Great. And if we've got men and women out there listening who would like to show their support and help you out or in any way, whether it was advocacy or whether it was the events, how could they do that?
Yeah, definitely. So we are always looking for volunteers, especially women who are living themselves with HIV. Mm. We have several volunteer programs, including volunteer peer support workers.
Mm-hmm.
So for women who are not living with HIV, they can actually still be involved at a board level.
Mm-hmm.
We accept philanthropic donations for anyone out there listening. Mm.
Yeah. Money's always an issue, isn't it?
Yeah, and if anyone comes to us and wants to volunteer or help out, we will definitely assess their particular skills and design something for them, because we can use help at all levels. And just because we don't know that we can use help in some level, if someone comes along with those skills, they might enlighten us.
Yeah.
So definitely get in touch if you have anything, if you feel you have anything to offer, definitely get in touch with us.
Absolutely. Now, is there anything else you'd like to add to our listeners on Well, Well, Well today?
I guess just a big thank you. Thank you to everyone who's listening. Thank you to you guys. Just all of this really helps to keep women on the agenda.
Yeah.
And that's really what we need. We need to get women recognized at all levels.
Absolutely.
So if you have anything you want to find out about Positive Women, you can go to their website, Positive Women.
Yes, positivewomen.org.au.
And ring them and contact Autumn online? Pierce online as well.
Yes.
Great. Thank you so much, Autumn.
Thank you.
It was lovely having you.
Thank you.
I hope that you might possibly come back with us soon one day on the show.
I'd love to. I love the sound of my own voice. So anytime.
And you can listen to the podcast again if you want to.
Joy 94.9.
This is Well, 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 and you're listening to Joy 94.9. Today we have got Jeremy coming on with us. Jeremy, are you there?
Yeah, hi.
Oh, great. So thank you coming on the show with us today. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. I was a bit worried that the phone thing might not work, but it's okay. So just to start off, could you give our listeners some insight into what you do at the VOC?
Yeah, so I work in the alcohol and drug services. So I coordinate a range of projects. Some of them are the therapeutic groups. So if people have heard of Rewired or Drink Limits or Transformed, they're our therapeutic groups that are facilitated to help people with their goals around changing or reducing or stopping their drug or alcohol use.
Yeah.
And I also do capacity building, so training mainstream alcohol and drug services around Victoria to be more LGBTI sensitive and inclusive.
Great.
It sounds like you're very busy.
I know. There's a lot that you don't do.
We're all busy, aren't we?
Yeah. We are.
Absolutely.
Now, Jeremy, you're here today to talk to us about Touchbase, the launch of the Touchbase website. Can you tell us what that is all about, please?
Yes. Today is very exciting because it's the official launch of Touchbase, which is Australia's new national drug and alcohol website for LGBTI community. So it's a one-stop shop for anyone from any of our communities, even people living with HIV or trans or genderverse or intersex people who might be on hormones or anyone who might be wanting information around drug and alcohol use, to go to this website and get everything that they need to know around how drugs work, how to take them safely, what to be aware of, if they want some support, where how to access support. It's got information on the interactions.
Yeah.
Who's actually launching it tonight?
Who's launching it?
Yeah. Who's your big name?
Use the big name? Well, VAC.
Victorian AIDS Council.
The VAC project with the Australian Drug Foundation and the Australian Federation of AIDS Organisations.
That sounds great. And so just for those listening, can you explain what the harm reduction terminology actually means?
Yeah, so harm reduction principles, or the framework of harm reduction, is around acknowledging that people are using drugs or alcohol, and harm reduction is around working with them to minimize the amount of harm involved. So one element of a harm reduction principle would be, for example, providing clean injecting equipment. So needle and syringe programs is an example of harm reduction. So with the Touchbase website, which is touchbase.org.au, it's a harm reduction website. So we're working with people that's in a culturally appropriate language.
Yeah.
We're hoping it's a fun website that people can visit to get the information that they need to reduce harm if they're going to be using drugs.
Mm. Exactly. And so it's not so much the big brother pointing at you with a naughty finger and telling you off, is it?
Yeah, it's not the old zero tolerance.
Yeah.
You mean it's not the just say no principle. Just say no.
Yeah. I think, you know, there's some elements of that conservatism around, but if you really want to work with people and recognize that they're humans, that they deserve rights, they have a choice to do what they want.
Yeah.
And if they want to access information and support and help, the best way to do that is through a harm reduction approach. You know, you're on the same page, you're on the same level, you respect the people, you work with what their needs are.
Yeah, absolutely.
It sounds like it's pretty diverse, the information on it, from everything from people who may be on antiretrovirals to gender diverse and alcohol issues.
Yeah.
So it covers something for really basically the whole community.
Yeah, it does. I mean, we think it's probably going to be one of the first websites or information resources in the world that would cover drug and alcohol interactions with not just HIV medications, but also hormones. So I guess, you know, there's a whole range of medications that some of our community members might be on for whatever reason. And if they're also using drugs or alcohol or smoking tobacco, you know, how does that all interact in their body? And it's important for people to know so they can take care of their health and well-being.
Great. And so what are the details of the launch coming up tonight? What time, where is it, and what's going to happen?
Well, it's at the Church of the Bang Bang Boogaloo, which is out the back of a 1,000-pound band.
Sorry, can you just repeat that? The Church of the Bang Bang
Boogaloo.
Boogaloo, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's a new renovated sort of like factory warehouse so people can have weddings or divorce parties.
It's a general
we
space.
We took it over to have a drug and alcohol launch.
Okay, awesome. Well, it sounds perfect, the Church of Boom Boom Boogaloo. Or
it's Bang Bang Boogaloo.
Oh, Bang Bang. Sorry. I beg your pardon.
Great. Also, and what time is that happening tonight?
From 6 till 8. And we've got some DJs, some bands, and some speeches by different organisations. We're also supporting the Institute of Many to launch their new Turning Tina resource, which is for HIV-positive men who use crystal meth.
Okay.
So great. There's something for most people, I think. There.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Jeremy, for coming on air with us. Can you give them that URL once again for our listeners?
Yeah, touchbase.org.au.
Touchbase.org.au. So those of you listening, if you want to go check it out, it's touchbase.org.au. We launched tonight. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, if anyone checks out the website and they see something that they like or that they think that we need to work on, there's a give feedback button down the bottom, and it's a whole of community approach, so get in touch with us.
Awesome.
Beauty, Jeremy.
Great. Thanks a lot, Jeremy. We'll be back.
Ciao.
Joy 94.9.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. Now, next Tuesday is World AIDS Day, December the 1st, and so get your red ribbon and wear that proudly. If you want to get involved on raising funds for World AIDS Day, you can host a red dinner. This involves inviting your friends around and hosting a dinner and getting a little contribution from them. If you register, we will even send you a free starter pack with free recipes of red-themed foods such as beautiful curries or red velvet cupcakes. We'll also include some red-themed decorations and placemats. For more information and details, go to www.vac.org.au/dinner.
That's right, and we've finally come to the end of another show,
We have.
It has been absolutely lovely. Thank you again to both Autumn from Positive Women and Jeremy.
Yes.
And don't forget, if you wanted to download our podcast, just go to joy.org.au and you'll find us. Thanks a lot, guys.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.